නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස Actually you can remember that we are discussing some suttas which are related to calming down mental proliferation so in that theme actually I have taken several suttas first of all we understood how these different mental proliferation so what we call as papancha starts so that is well explained in the madhupindika sutta and then we started to understand that it's a kind of a very refined process happening in our mind as at the beginning it starts like a causal reaction when our sense faculties including the mind when they encounter their corresponding objects that means eye with forms ear with sounds nose with smells tongue with taste body with the tactile sensations and then the mind with the mind objects so that actually leads to the rising of the corresponding consciousness and when this process happens again and again so it appears like these components are available for a long time so that leads to the notion of contact passa and then that contact leads to the development of the feeling and one start to recognize that perceive it and then we start thinking about it so ultimately the thinking improves and we are thinking in many different ways and it will lead to the mental proliferation and then one become sort of a victim of that vicious cycle so one is thinking and going on and then one is fully overwhelmed by thinking so obsessive thinking and then we understood through the Indriya Bhavana Sutta how Buddha asked us to overcome these mental proliferations by means of the upekkha so upekkha in the sense here it is not just the equanimity feeling rather it's a fairly advanced non-judgmental and again sort of serene equanimous state of mind nothing is grasped at that moment so mind basically has the pure awareness mere awareness and nothing else so basically mind does not grasp anything at all at that time and it's an unassociated state or unassociated state so Buddha recommends that as a kind of a refuge for the mind to stay again and again to dwell again and again as a result of that he recommends leading to that state or inclined towards that state as much as possible and therefore we understood that practically we have to develop it at the beginning it may take some time but slowly we gain the skill so that we are able to develop such kind of a state which is leading to the calmness of the mind freedom of the mind freedom from the mental proliferation freedom from wandering mind freedom from sort of rumination so it's a kind of a gradual process under that actually we discuss how a typical practitioner would do considering the olarika sankata patisampanna that is the understanding the gross nature of that conditioned state and the prepared or fabricated kind of state and then understanding the causal nature of that newly arisen state and when it comes to a trainee so he is fairly trained and fairly attuned seasoned in this practice so therefore he doesn't have to spend a lot of time so he can quickly return back to that equanimous state just because that he doesn't welcome that excited state or he does not welcome that newly arisen gross conditioned state rather he tried to dwell in the unconditioned simple and again spacious, unbound and again non-grasping state. So this nature or this process we started. Now I thought of going little further in the same theme. What are the other techniques that Buddha use in order to calm down mental proliferation? So as we can remember from Madhupindika Sutta, so mental proliferation is one of the result of too much thinking. So thinking, the pondering, and maybe rumination. So all these are certain characteristics that our minds are troubling with. And therefore, there are several suttas Buddha discuss how to overcome such kind of thinking. So one interesting sutta talking that aspect is the Dvedha Vitakka Sutta, available in Majjhima Nikaya, and we can translate it as two kinds of thought. So this is a very interesting situation where Buddha explains how he practiced before he became enlightened. Now he very humbly explained how his mind was behaving before his enlightenment and what are the precautions he has taken, what are the remedies that he has taken, constructive methods that he has used in order to tame the mind, in order to calm down the mind, in order to restrain the mind. So he very beautifully mentioned in this sutta that while he was in Jetavanarama, so he addressed the bhikkhus and there he mentioned, so before he become the Buddha, he was the Buddha to be, Bodhisattva. So at that time he got an idea, so I better divide thoughts into two parts, divide thoughts into two classes. So one class basically are the wholesome thoughts, the other part basically are the unwholesome thoughts. So the idea is that he is now going to watch the mind, observe the mind, and whenever some kind of a thought arising in the mind, so he is recognizing whether it is wholesome or whether it is unwholesome. So there are three main types of unwholesome thoughts. Those are called kama vitakka. Those are the sensual desires. Then vihinsa vitakka, thoughts of ill will, cruelty. Then vyapada vitakka, that is the thoughts of ill will. Kama vitakka, vyapada vitakka, vihinsa vitakka, thoughts of sensual desire, thoughts of ill will, and thoughts of cruelty. So these are the unwholesome thoughts typically we have in our mind. So it's a kind of a general categorization. There may be various differences or slight variations, but still in general these are the three types of unwholesome thoughts typically arise in our mind. Say for example, if we consider kama vitakka, thoughts related to the sensual desire. So it may be sensual desire that you are having to satisfy your eyes. You want to watch a movie, you want to go to see something, you want to see a newspaper, maybe a magazine or kind of a sight scenery. So this somehow we are trying to satisfy our desires through eyes. Similarly, through the ears, I want to listen to some music, want to listen to some songs. So likewise, through the ears, we are trying to satisfy our desires. So likewise, using the five senses, we are trying to satisfy our desires. So this is the sense desire. So this is a kind of a constant struggle to satisfy the desires, to gratify senses. It's a kind of a pressure principle that we all are involved with. So typically, majority of the people are going after that kind of pressure, acting according to such pressure principle. Now, whenever Buddha to be, the Bodhisattva understood, okay, his mind is now trying to entertain such sensual desire, so he recognized. Similarly, he mentioned whenever his mind trying to think of something ill will, some sort of hateful thought, angry thought, so that also he recognized and he put it to that category. So these are unwholesome thoughts. Similarly, if there is any kind of a cruel thought arisen in his mind, he recognized it, understood it and put it to the unwholesome side. And again, there is an interesting point here. So he understood the repercussions. He understood the consequences. What happened if he continued to think in these unwholesome thoughts? Say, for example, if you are thinking about according to the sensual desires, so Buddha say that it is leading to one's own affliction, and it may lead to the affliction of others, and again to the affliction of both, and again it obstructs wisdom, causes difficulties, and again leads away from Nibbana. Now say, for example, there was no sensual desire in a particular time, but due to some reason that you saw something beautiful, now you are being attracted towards that. It may be a man, it may be a woman, it may be a beautiful thing, whatever it is. So basically mind being attracted towards such object. So now you lost your balance. Assume that you are trying to keep your mind quite balanced, peaceful, non-attached. So fairly a spacious kind of a beautiful conducive state. But after you saw someone, after you hear someone or something, so this might change. So again you are lost, you have lost your equilibrium. Now again and again, now mind start to associate and trying to enjoy or try to find delight in that object. So that again some unarisen lust now going to arise. Previously there was no lust, but now lust is arising. Now you start to burn through lust. So therefore Buddha mentioned it is leading to the kind of downfall of one's own well-being. Previously mind was quite calm, peaceful, but now it is burning. So therefore it leads to my own affliction. So Bodhisattva understood, so whenever if I promote this sensual desire, it will slowly bring me to the affliction, burning of the mind. And again, assume that if you are entertaining and find delight in such thought, probably you may go after that person or going after that particular thing. You are being attracted to him or her. So likewise, suppose, I mean, he also be in a trouble. So suppose he is a married person. He or she is a married person. And now you have some sort of obsessive thoughts related to him or her. Now you are going after him, going after her. Now that person is also in trouble because he is already married. She is already married. Now there are unnecessary sort of conflicts going to arise. Now you understand the repercussions. What is going to happen to the other party? Because now you got a desire towards that person, but unfortunately he is already married. Now you going after him or her is no use. Pointless. Now unnecessary problems are now going to arise. So likewise, so Buddha says, so the Bodhisattva understood, if I am proceeding with this kind of thinking, it may not only harmful to me, but also harmful to the other side, to the other person. Suppose as a monk has completely sort of given up those kind of sensual desires, have to. So he's trying to live a kind of a celibate life. But still when a sensual desire arises, if he try to follow it, and if he is trying to contact the person to whom that he has made a kind of a desire, then everything become kind of confused, because it is not ethical in a way. A monk contacting another person with the wrong motives. So likewise, a monk or practitioner, whenever he is trying to sort of develop the mind, so he is understanding if one leads to this kind of sensual desires, if he is promoting it, so it is leading to the downfall of his own, and again making troubles to the others. And further Buddha mentioned, it obstructs wisdom. Now, in order for the wisdom to arise, as we discussed, so we have to have a kind of a calm mind. We have to have a very spacious mind, a sort of clear mind. The clarity of mind is a must in order to have good wisdom. It is not that we are thinking and trying to get sort of a wisdom, that is also one aspect. But here particularly, so when the mind is crowded with various sensual desires, so then it's very unlikely that you are going to improve wisdom. And on the other hand, the opposite may going to happen. Suppose that you already have certain insights and your mind is, just because of that, you are able to maintain in a serene sort of an equilibrium without much attachment, without any burning. But now, because of this sensual desire, now you are basically going to destroy that wisdom which you have, developed through a lot of difficulties, through a lot of hardships. Suppose you went through a kind of a retreat, you spend the whole day, wake up in the morning. So likewise, you did a lot of contribution. But ultimately, when you come home and start to enjoy various things, enjoy sensual desires, so then probably it might lead to the sort of gradual decaying of all those beautiful states that you already achieved. So you understand that the danger, what's going to happen to the wisdom, what's going to happen to the concentration, what's going to happen to the mindfulness, which you have already earned, which I already developed, because of the association of these kind of sensual thoughts. And then further Buddha mentioned that leads away from Nibbana. Because Nibbana is basically a calming and non-attached sort of a state that according to the teaching. But now your mind being attached is going away from Nibbana. And again, instead of having a cool, calm state, now again the mind start to agitate and mind start to burn. Either may be lust, either may be anger. So likewise, so when we understand the consequences of this kind of thinking, the unwholesome thinking, then so mind sort of get educated, or mind get learned about the these disadvantages. It's a matter of educating the mind. It's very much like we are trying to educate a little child. So he at the beginning doesn't know that say something is not good. So as parents, as say teachers, you have to warn him. You have to make him aware about the danger. So similarly, here also the Bodhisattva mentioned that whenever such thoughts come into the mind, so he understood the danger, and accordingly he now categorizing them into the unwholesome group. So similarly, when he is thinking like that, or when he is pondering like that, when he understand like the that kind of danger, then he mentioned that slowly those thoughts start to disappear. Attabhyadayapi sangvattati, parabhyadayapi sangvattati, ubhayabhyadayapi sangvattati, panya nirodhiko, vighata pakkiko, anibbana sangvattaniko. So these are all the consequences. So it is leading to your own destruction or the downfall. It is leading to someone else's downfall. It is leading to both's downfall. And again, panya nirodhiko, it is going to the waxing of the wisdom, the decaying of the wisdom, disappearance of the wisdom. And it is vigata pakkiko, it is sort of producing some suffering. And anibbana sangvattaniko, it is taking you away from Nibbana. So more you understand that, so if you are able to educate the mind in this respect, so basically, so mind may not continue in thinking like that. Sensual thought may arise and you are mindful about it. And now you sort of give a sort of an education to the mind, warning to the mind, if you are leading in thinking like this, These are the consequences. These are the repercussions. These are the disadvantages. So you are educating the mind. You are warning the mind about the danger. So then Buddha mentioned, so when he understood like that, the sensual desire in him started to decay, started to remove. Uppannanam kama vitakkam pajahameva vinodameva byantameva nang akasi. Now he is slowly abandoning it, removing it, and did away with it. And this procedure is common to kama vitakka, so that is the sensual desires which we discussed, and then it can be used to ill will, vyapada vitakka, and it also can be used with the vihinsa vitakka, that is the thoughts of cruelty. Now we have certain frustration about a person, kind of a resistance towards a person, anger towards a person, ill will towards a person. So if we are trying to keep it in our mind, so we are the ones going to burn, we are the ones going to suffer, and we are the ones going to lose what we have already developed, maybe mindfulness, maybe concentration, maybe wisdom, what we have earned so far because of our own practice. So we sort of warn the mind, so don't associate these kind of thoughts, because it is harmful to you, it is harmful to the other person, and harmful to the both sides. And when you are thinking, you start to burn, you start to suffer, and again you are going away from Nibbana. And when you are understanding these consequences, Buddha mentioned, okay, the sensual desires start to disappear, and so the mind is start to free from them, and you have removed them, did away from them. So he is applying the same technique to all different types of unwholesome thoughts. And there's a very interesting statement Buddha mentioned here. It is very much kind of a psychological statement. Yanya deva bhikkave bhikkhu bahulamannu vitakketi anu vichareti tatha tatha nati hoti chetaso. So what it means is that what you think more and more, to which, to that direction your mind going to incline. Say for example, that you are thinking too much of sensual desires, then your mind get inclined towards sensual desires. The next time you don't need to purposely think, but the mind itself start to think. Now your mind being conditioned. Now it is very much like a learned behavior. Say you are again and again thinking about some sensual desires, you are promoting it, you are burning with it, you are even mentally proliferate with it, you fabricate with it, you are going for various fantasies. Now your mind is fairly thinking in that direction. It's difficult to avoid now even, because you have trained the mind to think in that sense. So this is a very dangerous state in one way, because we feel that it's a kind of an innocent process. I didn't go to any kind of adultery or any kind of sexual harassment or something like that. But I am thinking and enjoying. But, so that is how the mind become conditioned in that sort of wrong way of thinking. Now suppose you are again and again thinking about someone, about his wrong deeds, or that what he did wrong to you, and what are the wrong, bad qualities he has. So likewise, whenever you are thinking again and again on that person, then your mind become conditioned. Now you can't see even the good side of that person. Because you are programmed the mind in a way. You have trained the mind in a way to think the opposite. So mind become inclined towards that direction. So this is a kind of a mental state that we are dealing with. So whatever the angle that we are associating with, or whatever the kind of stream of thought that we are associating with, so mind start to take that as a kind of a norm, as a kind of a pattern of thinking. Now, when Buddha understood this, so there he understand another repercussion of the whole scenario. So when he is thinking about, say, unwholesome, say, sensual desire, so he understand, okay, if I am continue to think like this, so my mind become conditioned, my mind become programmed, my mind become sort of inclined towards that way of thinking. So it is quite harmful to me, harmful to the others, harmful to both sides, and it will destroy the wisdom, and it is taking me away from Nibbana. So it's a kind of an insight that we can have, and again kind of a precaution we can have, we have to have, and accordingly we have to associate the opposite. Now, suppose that you are thinking too much about ill will, thoughts of ill will, then your temperament become onto that side. So you become a short-tempered person. Whatever is even a small thing, slightest thing, you become angry, because your mind been conditioned in that direction. Similarly, suppose you are entertaining too many thoughts of cruelty, harming others, again and again thinking about how to harm another person to get the revenge. So your mind being conditioned in that way of thinking. Now while driving, you may start to think about him, how to harm the other person. Say while waiting for someone, you are thinking like that. Say while in a queue, suppose you have gone to the bank and you are in the queue, and now the mind start to thinking how to get the revenge. Suppose you are even watching movie, but your mind being thinking something else, that is trying to find various ways and means how to get the revenge. Because now your mind being inclined towards that sort of vihinsa vitakka, the thoughts of cruelty. So therefore we have to be very careful in how to handle our mind. So it's very much like we are training a child. So you know certain terrorist organizations, they are training children to commit suicide bombers. So because those are innocent children, and you can actually brainwash them. So similarly here, so mind is also something that very powerful, but if you are misusing it, if you are putting it in the wrong direction, so ultimately the person who is handling that mind is going to suffer. So if we are using our own mind in the wrong direction, so we are going to suffer. And on the other hand, Buddha mentioned, so whenever his mind thinking about nekkhamma vitakka, thoughts of renunciation, so there he understood, okay, this is a wholesome thought. Whenever his mind is thinking of loving kindness, so he understood this is a wholesome thought. Whenever his mind is start to think about say being kind, some compassionate thought, so he understood this is a wholesome thought, it is not harmful to me, and it is not harmful to another person, it is not harmful to both sides, and it may not lead to the destruction or degradation of the wisdom, and it is not taking me away from Nibbana. So now the advantages of the wholesome thoughts, now Buddha is understanding, or rather the Bodhisattva is understanding. Now you can see how genuinely or how frankly he has explained that his own different techniques that he used as a Bodhisattva. Because you can see, I mean, even his mind sometimes had enjoyed various different sensual thoughts, ill will thoughts, sort of thoughts of cruelty. But he understood now these are not good. These are harmful to me. These are harmful to the other person. These are harmful to both sides. And this may sort of reduce already arisen wisdom. And again, bring me away from the Nibbana. Because he is in search of Nibbana. But unfortunately, this way of thinking not lead into that. Instead, it is taking away from Nibbana. So he applied these theories. I mean, it is not merely a theory, but rather he is practically trying to apply it. Now the opposite happens when the thoughts of renunciation is arising. So there he understood they are not harmful. They are not leading away from Nibbana, rather it is making me closer to the Nibbana. So likewise he is now promoting wholesome thoughts. Now again thoughts of loving kindness, thoughts of compassion, kindness. Now he understood they are not harmful to me, harmful to another person, not harmful to the both sides, and not leading to any kind of a degradation of wisdom, and does not bring away from the Nibbana. So he understood that. Now there's another interesting point highlighted here. Now he understood the wholesome states. When he is associating, it is going to sort of cleanse in the mind. So when the mind is associating unwholesome thoughts, so it is basically polluting the mind. But when he is associating wholesome thoughts, they are sort of cleanse in the mind. So therefore he is more and more trying to cleanse the mind instead of harming the mind. Instead of polluting the mind, instead of burning the mind. Now, this has to be felt. So, Buddha has mentioned it, but these states have to be felt by each individual. So, when we are associating unwholesome thoughts, we have to understand, okay, the mind getting polluted. Mind becomes somewhat crowded, somewhat congested, somewhat restricted. So I feel stressed, I feel tensed. So likewise you yourself have to understood that through your own introspection. But on the opposite, when you are thinking say renunciative thoughts, thoughts of loving kindness, thoughts of compassion, so there you understand a kind of a positive atmosphere being developed in the mind. So you feel calm, you feel sort of somewhat happy, and the day can be spent without much trouble, and you can associate others with less trouble, so the relationships become smooth, so mutual understanding is there, so you start to kind of forgiving, and your mental well-being is there. So likewise, so this is something that we have to reflect in our own mind. I mean, no point of just keeping it just to the theory, but we have to practically understand the advantages of when thinking the wholesome side and when abandoning the unwholesome thoughts. Now there's another very interesting point. Even the wholesome thoughts, now suppose you are able to avoid as much as possible the unwholesome thoughts, the thinking of all unwholesome thoughts. Now you are trying to only think the wholesome thoughts. Say for example, in practical sense, suppose previously your mind was associated too much ill will. Now you start to practice loving kindness meditation, metta meditation. You are practicing it again and again and you find it very beautiful and you feel happy. So as much as possible during the daytime you are practicing loving kindness, during the evening you are trying to practice loving kindness, during the night you are trying to practice loving kindness, metta. Fine, no problem. Now slowly, so the previous agitation, previous sort of burning in the mind start to reduce and you start to feel happy, you start to feel somewhat calm. Because now thinking is going on, but the thinking is with respect to the wholesome side, loving kindness thoughts. But later, once you come, you may reach a state, even this thinking, though they are wholesome thoughts, makes you little tired, makes you little troubled, makes you feel burdened. So Buddha very beautifully mentioned here, but with excessive thinking and pondering, I might tire my body. And when the body is tired, the mind becomes strained. And when the mind is strained, it is far from concentration. Now, it is true that you have replaced unwholesome thoughts with wholesome thoughts. Now you are trying to think as much as possible the wholesome thoughts. But when you start to overthink, and even when you are now completely avoiding unwholesome thoughts and only think the wholesome thoughts, while the mind become more mindful and fairly sensitive, you may understand, okay, even thinking about the wholesome thoughts, occupying the mind with wholesome thoughts, makes me tired, makes even the body feeling tired. So there's a very interesting finding here Buddha mentioned. It's a kind of practical thing there Buddha mentioned, that Achitiraṁ anuvitakkayato anuvicārayato kāyo kilameya kāyo kilante cittaṁ uhanyaya uhate citte ārā cittaṁ samādhimhāti. Atichiraṁ anuvitakkayato, when you are thinking too much, excessive thinking, it's wholesome thoughts, but you are thinking it too much. Anuvicharyato, so you are keeping your mind more and more, sustaining your mind more and more in the wholesome thoughts. Maybe wholesome objects. Suppose you do Buddha Anusati, suppose you do Metta. Those are wholesome thoughts. But it also leads to the refinement of the mind, sensitivity is improving, mindfulness improving, and you may lead a state that this thinking is now become a burden. Now it is difficult to bear. You feel sort of tired in thinking. And the body also feel tired. And when the mind and the body feeling tired, and Buddha mentioned the concentration going away and going far and far, going away. So you are going away from the concentration. So now what to do? You have to keep the mind quiet. You got to stop thinking, because it won't be much difficult, because now the mind is fairly trained. Now it is trying to think only the positive side. It is now trying to think only the positive thoughts or the wholesome thoughts. Now it's a matter of slowly calming it down. You may have to do it gradually, not immediately. Suppose, say for example, you were practicing loving kindness meditation throughout the day. And as a result of that, now you feel calm. There are no thoughts of ill will. Maybe even you practice asubha bhavana. So there are no thoughts of kamachanda, sensual desires. So likewise, you are systematically, you are training the mind. But once you reach some state, you need to check. Is it possible to stop, reduce this? Reduce in the sense, suppose you were practicing metta throughout the day, now how about practicing it less and see how the mind is behaving? It doesn't mean that you now start to think the opposite, rather you keep the mind quiet, free from inner chatter. And you may actually have to find something more subtle, like anapanasati, like elements meditation. Because now you are further improving the mind. So those types of meditation does not require any kind of thinking. Rather, it's a silent observation, concentrated observation. So whenever your mind is occupying with that kind of silent and sort of precise observation, so you can let go of even the wholesome thoughts. Say for example, you can reduce metta bhavana or buddha anusati, but you can increase the time of anapanasati. Anapanasati is a kind of a neutral object, and your mind become less thinking, and it become kind of a sharp observing, very accurate, precise observing is there. So Buddha mentioned here, ajjattameva cittaṁ santapemi sannisadeemi ekodin karomi samadhaami tankisa hetu mame cittang uhanya titi. Now he understood even when I am thinking wholesome thoughts excessively, the mind feel tired, the body feel tired. So let me simply keep the mind quiet and fairly somewhat anchored towards the body. So the mind is associating the body without thinking. Suppose you are walking, mind associate the walking posture. While you are sitting, the mind associates sitting posture. While different sensations are there in the body, so mind associate those sensations, but no thinking. So you are silently observing. So this is where we can say, now one may lead to the vipassana, because slowly this silent observation, continuous observation, makes you to deeper understandings. It is not that you are trying to think and get the understanding. That is one aspect of knowledge. But here, you are now coming to the bhavanamaya panya, where your mind is quiet, concentrated, mindful, and using that, you are constantly observing various phenomena arising at this very moment. Mind is quiet and less distractions. Mind wandering has almost stopped, but it is associating the body. Various bodily phenomena now being observed carefully. So this is very interesting point that we need to understand. So when you start to practice kayanupassana, so this sort of gradual systematic approach, if you are using, then you slowly come to this state. At the beginning you categorize the thoughts, wholesome, unwholesome. You understood the repercussions, consequences of the unwholesome thoughts, so you abandon them. Now you start to promote the thinking of wholesome thoughts. Basically, you have replaced unwholesome thoughts with wholesome thoughts. Now you are practicing it. More and more, you are associating wholesome thoughts. And you may reach the state that even thinking wholesome thoughts feel tired. At that time, you are reducing these different thinking of wholesome thoughts. Rather, you start to calm down the mind. Keep the mind onto some neutral object and start to do a kind of an investigation. You now try to practice insight meditation in a way, using a very quiet mind without thinking. So you do sort of observation, silent observation, and that will lead to further understanding. And with that, I like to conclude today's sutta teaching session, so we can discuss some more aspects, some other interesting points that Buddha highlight in this sutta next week. Now I like to open the session for questions.
Friends that's joining us for the first time, you may ask questions by raising your hand, or you can also submit them anonymously via the chat feature. Don, I'd like to invite you to please ask your question.
Thank you. Thank you, Bhante, for the session today.
Yeah.
Actually, I think at the towards the end, Bhante, you mentioned that even the wholesome thoughts can make it be tiring. So, you know, Bhante, I was thinking of asking you a question like, are there, you know, today we talked about the prapancha, like, are there good prapancha? So, is this an example for good prapancha?
Yeah, we can say so, because... Now, suppose that you are thinking some renunciative thoughts or loving-kindness thoughts. So, the mind may be fully occupied with that sort of thinking. So, it may be, we can say it is better than thinking unwholesome thoughts, better than thinking sensual desires or ill will or cruelty, better to think the opposite. So, it's kind of a prapancha. But later, later you have to even calm down there. Slowly you have to cut off excessive thinking and allow the mind to slowly take to a state where complete calming down or the complete freedom from inner chatter. Freedom from prapancha. So say for example, now you are practicing anapanasati. So you can't actually fully concentrate and you can't find the beginning, middle, end if your mind start to think. If there are various thoughts coming to the mind, so you can't correctly observe different aspects of the breath. So when you are leading or when you are arriving the third state, sabbakaya patisangvedi, you are trying to observe the beginning, middle and the end of the breath. So that indicates mental proliferation has almost calmed down. Your mind is not thinking. There are no even thoughts. You have forgot the whole world. Now your mind is fully concentrated with the breath. So this is the kind of an achievement in a way. Slowly we have come according to this sutta.
Yes. So Subhante, we can say like, even when the good prapancha are not good. Even the prapancha in wholesome should not be promoted. Yeah,
definitely.
That's the summary.
Yeah, definitely. Yes.
Okay.
And again, there is another interesting point. Now, sometimes we start to listen so many Dhamma talks, we start to read many Dhamma books. So likewise, that is actually good, not bad. So that start to occupy the mind now. Now you are thinking about the Dhamma, analyzing Dhamma, and you are sort of rationalizing various things. So that is, now your mind become occupied with the thoughts related to the suttas, Dhamma talks, Dhamma books, etc. But later, you have to slowly reduce it. You have to come to a more deeper practicing of the Dhamma. You have to live the Dhamma. And ultimately, there may be a situation where, suppose you are trying to meditate, while when your mind calm down, the mind takes some Dhamma topic and start to think. So that is in a way wrong. Even that has to be abandoned. At that time, it is a kind of a distraction. So, when the mind is prepared to silent observation, very careful attention of various bodily phenomena, various feelings or even thoughts, so at that time, we should not encourage even thinking on to various Dhamma topics. Rather, we have to allow the mind to carefully observe things as they truly are. So the understanding become your own, not something kind of a borrowed knowledge or borrowed understanding, but you are having your hands-on experience. So you are now promoting your hands-on experience. At that time, we should not borrow anything from outside. Rather, we have to allow the mind to observe various things. And on the other terms, we can say, Buddha mentioned, Dhammo pi bhikkave pahatabba pageva adhamma. So Buddha mentioned, monks, even the Dhamma has to be abandoned. Then how about the non-Dhamma? Yeah.
Thank you, Bhante. Thank you so much.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you. I'd like to invite Priya to please ask the next question.
Hi, Bhante. This is Priyadarshini.
Yes.
Yeah, Bhante, I experience brief moments where my mind is quiet, and then I am aware of my body, there's no attention to any particular place or thing. But I'm quite aware. It's like my body is there like that. But it's not associating with anything. So I don't know whether that is what you explain as empty state.
Yeah.
Bhante?
Yes. I mean, it has to be arrived again and again. Now, so you are going to assume that you are observing various bodily phenomena, maybe element characteristics, and as you continue that, mind start to let go of that, and they become sort of faded away, they become blurred, and you can't recognize their distinct characteristics. and they go away, and now mind has nothing to associate. So at that time, don't encourage, don't push your mind back to the phenomena. Rather, allow the mind to take a rest.
Bhante, what do you mean by rest? Because even in that state, my mind is aware of my body. I feel like it's not going away from my body, associating body. So I feel like it's not still not quite free.
Are there any bodily phenomena that you have to observe at that time?
No, I don't.
Right.
I don't. So, I am aware.
Yes, fine. So this awareness, point is, you can't have 100% emptiness immediately. So at the moment, at the early stage, so we are trying to occupy the mind with the body. True. And later we are trying to recognize something momentary experience, and that becomes our primary object, and we are trying to observe that again and again. So that will lead us to various insights. So these phenomena are extremely impermanent, inconstant, they are unsatisfactory, and they are non-self. So likewise, now fair amount of insights are available to the mind. Now when those insights start to mature, now those phenomena become somewhat blurred. So they appear like flux. And you can't distinctly recognize individual characteristics. Now everything appear like a flux, everything is changing, and everything is kind of, type of a flux. And now mind start to go away from them, and mind doesn't want to associate anything. So at that time you feel at the beginning like the kind of mind is taking kind of an overview of the body.
Yeah.
But later, you understand that even though mind is very somewhat like associate in the body, there is no any particular place for it to associate. You got the point. There is no any specific point for the mind to associate. Kind of an overall body being observed. But even that, it is not, mind is not established any particular place. Now, likewise, even this body become body is there, but mind doesn't want to use it as a kind of a platform.
Yeah, very clear, Bhante.
Okay.
Very clear. Thank you very much. Yeah.
31 Saranai. 31
Saranai. Thank you, Jennifer. Bhante, this... Sutta, Dika, Buddha, relate the two thoughts to the when we are meditating in Bhante. Was that solely for that purpose?
No, it is kind of mind training, meditating in the sense now he want to become the Buddha, he is now the Bodhisattva, and he understood what are the thoughts going on. So we can say this is some sort of a beginning of Chittanupassana. So he is aware of it. Now he is developing mindfulness with respect to the mind, and there he understood what are the thoughts available in the mind. So certain thoughts are wholesome, certain thoughts are unwholesome. So he start to categorize all the thoughts coming in the mind to these two groups. So therefore it is, we can say, it's a type of Chittanupassana, and later he slowly abandoned the unwholesome, and now the wholesome is available, and ultimately even that is being abandoned.
Yes, Bhante. So, but also being a very practical point, we should be able to apply it when we are dealing with the world. Isn't that right, Bhante?
Yeah, definitely. We can easily apply this approach to the world, because whenever we are associating other person, suppose there are ill thoughts of ill will are arising. So if we are entertaining those ill will thoughts, then they become harmful to me, harmful to the other person. So before it reaches very vulnerable state, you are giving some sort of warning to the mind. So like Buddha mentioned here, atta vyadayapi sangvattati, para vyadayapi sangvattati, ubhaya vyadayapi sangvattati. So you understand now there are sensual thoughts, now there are thoughts of ill will arising in the mind. So before it reaches very vulnerable, very harmful state, you give a kind of a warning to the mind. Don't go on this way of thinking. It is harmful to you. It is harmful to the other person. It is harmful to both sides. So then, when the mind is educated like that, when the mind has given such kind of precaution, then it is very much like a child. Now he abandoned that and he start to calm down.
Yes, Manji, because for me, I don't get those thoughts when I meditate, but obviously when you are dealing with the world, we get, obviously we have our likes and dislikes, Manji.
Yes,
so
yes, yes.
That is the time to actually...
practice.
Put this into practice.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. So that is why I am constantly telling, now when you reach Chittanupassana, if you are trying to practice Chittanupassana only on the cushion, only at the walking path, so that is not enough.
Yes.
So slowly we have to watch the mind throughout the day, and we have to expand our attention or the observation throughout the day, because defilements doesn't have any excuse.
But sometimes when we are watching like that in the practical sense in daily life also, the mind gets tired, Bhante.
Observation doesn't make ourselves tired, because we are, say for example, now suppose you are able to have a silent mind. What do you think? Is the silent mind make you tired?
No.
That's the point. So at the beginning, the tiredness arises because of thoughts or because of thinking. But once you understood that, you slowly, systematically, you calm down it. And once it is calm down, now you have a kind of a silent mind. It doesn't go on and on. It doesn't think too much, or it is not going to proliferation. So you feel sort of a calmness. And in a way, it's a kind of an energy-saving mode, we can say.
Yes, I understand. But
yeah.
When we are trying to be sati all the time, sometimes it can be tiring.
No, that is an interesting point, actually. So at the beginning, what we have is a kind of a purposeful sati. So we are deliberately make ourselves mindful. So that's
yes.
A kind of a deliberate mindfulness. Because otherwise our mind gets distracted and we become lost in various mental proliferation. So that is the first stage. Agreed. But slowly as we develop mindfulness and as we develop concentration, as we develop wisdom, so as we discuss now, the mind starts to let go of all the phenomena. So because it understood the impermanent nature, it understood the unsatisfactoriness, it understood the non-self feature, the characteristic. So now the mind is very well, equipped with the wisdom.
Yes.
With the wisdom. So with that, so it is not, it doesn't want to associate anything. It doesn't want to establish on anything. So at that time what happened, now your mind become empty. So now, where is the mindfulness? So it is a kind of an inherent quality there. It is not that you are deliberately maintaining, rather mind has its inherent inbuilt characteristic. Mindfulness is an inherent quality of the mind. So sometimes I use the term effortless mindfulness here. So you don't need to purposely make the mind mindful. Rather, when the mind is not associating anything, you are at the home of mindfulness. It is like you are wearing your glasses already. Now don't look at glasses anywhere else.
Yes.
Yeah, because you are already wearing the spectacles.
Yes, Vandi. Yes, thank you.
Yeah,
understood.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer. Sri Swami Nansa, can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
Swami Nansa, when you reach the stage where there are no mental proliferations and like your mind is totally quiet, like there's no vitakka, you are just observing, like the free mindfulness, the inherent quality is there. Then, Swaminathan, so you see all these underlying feelings and all these thoughts that are not brought up by you, but like the mind is automatically putting them forward.
Hmm.
What is the Dhamma phenomenon behind that? I thought it was Anusaya Dhamma,
yes,
but I'm not sure whether it is that.
Correct. That is the Anusaya. So that is why we need to understand. Now we have arrived the calmness of the mind. Now we have arrived the purity of the mind. But still, mind is taking, say, some sensual thoughts. Whenever we see someone beautiful, say, those sensual thoughts, sensual desires start to pop up. When we see something disliked, when we see something ugly, or when we see someone we don't like, so immediately thoughts of ill will arising in the mind. So why is the reason? Because mind is conditioned to think like this. So this is the potential in a way. So they are latent. Those tendencies in the mind are latent. So that is why Buddha mentioned, so don't misunderstand, even though you arrive purified state of mind, as a kind of a permanent purification. This is a kind of a temporary purification we arrive. But the latent tendencies are still available. So that is where the Buddha's teaching is very important. So most of the other teachers, when you arrive this kind of a temporary freedom, so they sometimes overestimate, thinking, okay, now my mind is completely free. But Buddha very correctly mentioned here, so you have to be precautious, you have to have a kind of a precaution. Still the tendencies are available. It is true that at the moment your mind is free, but there is a possibility to again pollute the mind, to again occupy the mind using those thoughts. So how to remove them? So that is the important point in a way. So how to overcome these latent tendencies? So if we refer this Madhupindika Sutta itself.
Yes.
So there Buddha very beautifully, very categorically mentioned, if you are not promoting thinking, if you are not promoting mental proliferation, when these anusaya may come to the surface, then you are in a way calming down the anusaya. Because how are we strengthening these latent tendencies? So whenever those potentials come to the surface, we notice it, but we sometimes don't notice it even. We become a victim of it. We start to think in line with them. We start to mentally proliferate. So what happened ultimately is that we have strengthened that tendency further. Because we thought according to that line, and so we have strengthened that. So as even today, we discuss in the Dvedavitakta Sutta, the way we think, that is the mind become trained in that line. So if we are thinking in line with sensual thoughts, now later we don't need to put our hand, the mind will take care of thinking of the sensual thoughts. So say if we are promoting the thoughts of ill will, later we don't need to think, the mind will itself start to think. So that is the conditioning happened to the mind. Now what we do, whenever ill will thoughts are arising due to some reason, so previously there was no ill will thoughts, but now due to some reason thoughts of ill will are arising, we recognize, we mindful about it, and we let it go, rather than promoting it. You got the point?
Yeah. So basically just observing them, and the non-attachment to them is the gradual removal of
it. The non-attachment and letting go. Yes.
Okay.
So I used to say, allowing them to come, allowing them to be, allowing them to go.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very clear.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you.
Bhante, I have a quick question. So you mentioned about the metta practice. And so as we continue to, I guess, do the metta practice, there is no thoughts. It's just feeling of metta. At that point, are we saying that it's still better to even not even have a feeling of metta? It's just better to be in a neutral state of observation?
Yeah, it depends actually, Jennifer. Now, how about you are maintaining the quality of metta instead of mind being occupied with thoughts of metta? Now, the thoughts are the issue here. I mean, at the one stage, so you are at the beginning, you are occupying the mind with thoughts. May I be well? May I be happy? May I be free from suffering? May he be well, may he be happy, may he be free from suffering. So likewise, we are occupying the mind with thoughts. But later, when it comes to the metta meditation also, so we are slowly concentrating the mind with the metta quality, but no thoughts. But later you can understand, now the mind is conditioned with metta. Now, can you agree that is it the conditioned mind is the good thing or the unconditioned mind is the good thing?
I guess ultimately we want to get to an unconditioned
mind. Yeah. So that's the point. So we are using, so that is where the Buddha beautifully mentioned, idam nissaya idam pajahata. So his teaching makes us from gross level to a subtle level. So once we associate that subtle level for some time, then it becomes gross. And we have to let go of that in order to arrive another subtle level, more subtle level. And when we are start to dwell in that new subtle level for some more time, then you feel that is also gross. And then you let go of that and you go to a further subtle level. So likewise, so Buddha's teaching bring us from gross state to a subtle state. So ultimately there is nothing to grasp. So it's a matter of using them depending on the situation, make use of it, get their benefit, and then let it go.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then, as we heard Venerable Dhammachiva as well as other sensei mention that we could use the Brahma Vihara to reach the...
Jennifer, can you talk a little louder? I can't hear you.
Oh, sorry, I'm not using headphones today. Is this better?
Yeah.
Okay. So, as heard Venerable Dhammachiva as well as other sensei mention that we could use the Brahma Vihara to actually reach the third stage of enlightenment. But is that when he's not using like samadhi or practicing the Brahma Vihara, is he using like a more of a vipassana method?
Yeah, correct. Now say for example, so when you are developing what you call the enlightenment factors. So Buddha mentioned metta sahagatena satasammojjangam bhave. Vivekanisitam, viraganisitam, nirodhanisitam, vasanga parinama. So that means that you are developing mindfulness while associating the quality of metta. So that is the quality of metta is there. So it may not be the words. I mean you can use words just to introduce metta to the mind at the early stage in order to sort of pick it up to get the momentum. So once the mind has attuned towards the metta, so you are using that metta quality as a kind of a base, as a kind of a background, and then you are further developing mindfulness, you are further developing investigation, you are further developing wisdom. So likewise, all the enlightenment factors Buddha mentioned, you can develop while keeping the metta as a sort of a lubricant, in a way we can say. Because sometimes, you know, practicing vipassana become somewhat dry. On such situation, you can little develop metta and you can lubricate the situation, and then the the vehicle may start to lead smoothly, and you don't feel right because your mind is somewhat happy, and you are further developing different enlightenment factors, and the lubrication is the metta. Similarly, you can use other brahmaviharas also, so that our mind become in a kind of a happy state without being completely dry. So I can agree with you. And on the other hand, so when you come to the third stage, what you call the anagami, so as you mentioned, so maybe because ill will is not there in the mind at all, so you have completely abandoned the five lower fetters, that kamaraga patiga completely abandoned. So why we need metta is because our mind still has patiga anusaya, the tendency towards the ill will. So when one reaches anagami, so you are completely abandoned the patiga anusaya, and the raga anusaya, lust and the hatred, both are gone. So there is no need of petta.
Thank you.
Okay, I think that's all the questions we have. So then we can wind up today's session. So we have discussed some dhamma, and again we went on a sutta teaching from the Buddha. And with that we were able to accumulate a lot of merits. We share these merits by reciting the traditional verses. Ittavata ca amheni sambatam punya sampadam sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Ittavata ca amheni sambatam punya sampadam sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Ittavata ca amheni sambatam punya sampadam sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Akasattha ca bhummattha devanaga mahiddhika puññantam anumoditvā ciraṁ rakkhantu sāsanam. Ākāsattha ca bhummattha devānāga mahiddhikā puññantam anumoditvā ciraṁ rakkhantu desanam. Ākāsattha ca bhummattha devānāga mahiddhikā puññantam anumoditvā ciraṁ rakkhantu mam param. Idaṁ vo ñātīnaṁ hotu sukhitā ahantu ñātayo. Idaṁ vo ñātīnaṁ hotu sukhitā huntu ñātayo. Idaṁ vo ñātīnaṁ hotu sukhitā huntu ñātayo. Imina puñña kammena māme bāla samāgamo. Satang samāgamo hotu yāve nibbāna pattiyā. Imina puñña kammena māme bāla samāgamo. Satang samāgamo hotu yāve nibbāna pattiyā. Imina punya kammena māme bāla samāgamo. Satang samāgamo hotu yāva nibbāna pattiyā. Sādhu, sādhu, sādhu.